to our latest edition of March Madness 365. I'm your host, Andy Katz. And on this edition of our show, I'm going to be joined by new Memphis head coach, famous alum, former NBA player, Penny Hardaway, and former Memphis head coach, new High Point head coach, Tubby Smith. So Memphis fans, give you a little bit of an interesting perspective, your former coach and your new coach, and certainly fans that have followed Tubby Smith throughout the course of his illustrious career can hear why he decided to make this move at this juncture of his career and his life to a lower level and go to his alma mater as well at High Point, as Penny Hardaway has returned to his alma mater at Memphis. So two unique conversations with Penny Hardaway and Tubby Smith. Now joining me here on March Madness 365, Penny Hardaway, the new head coach of the Memphis Tigers. Obviously a very familiar name to that university, to that area. Penny, why was the timing right for you to make the jump right now?
Well, I felt like I had fulfilled everything that I needed to fulfill in high school. I had just won my third straight state championship in a row. I had a great group of guys, but I felt like the timing was perfect for me to leave because I had really done everything that I could do in high school. And the city was in dire need. The school was in dire need because Coach Smith wasn't there anymore. And I just decided to take it.
You know, we've seen this before where heralded NBA guys, iconic names, you know, maybe have dipped their toe in coaching and some have been successful. Some haven't. Some have gone the route that you had of either, you know, coaching at a lower level or being an apprentice as an assistant, if you will. Why was it critical for you to get that experience on the bench, actually calling timeouts, being in huddles, before you were to take on a job of this magnitude?
Well, it was just preparing for that. I think the best teacher is the experience. And, you know, I got kind of put into a situation with a friend that had cancer to start coaching. And once I started coaching, I wanted to be great at my craft. So I felt like every step of the way, I was just bettering myself to be a coach on a higher level. So I went from middle school, learning. I knew everything. I'm still an NBA player coaching middle school, but still learning. I'm a student of the game, figuring it out. Like you say, calling the timeouts, adjusting defenses, putting certain offenses in, and went into AAU with the same philosophies, still growing as a coach. And then into high school, when I felt like on the high school level and on the AAU level that I was coaching college because of the kids that I was coaching on a daily basis in high school, and when I was able to coach AAU, we had the number one team in the country. So, you know, and the teams that we were playing against were guys that were going to be major D1 college players anyway. So I felt like I was preparing myself for college if I ever wanted to go that route.
So when you were playing, and I know, you know, your career was cut short by injuries, but at any point, had you considered that in the future you would be a coach of some sort?
Absolutely not. I knew that I wanted to work with kids, but I didn't know that it would be at the magnitude of coaching college or even coaching high school. The middle school, you know, my friend needed me, and I was there for him. But going on to high school, we just kind of, you know, it just kind of followed the group that I had. But I never thought when I was in the NBA that I would be coaching middle school, high school, or college. That was never my intention.
You know, we've seen this before, as I mentioned, whether it's Patrick Ewing at Georgetown, Chris Mullin at St. John's, when Clyde Drexler tried Houston. How critical was it for you in making this decision that it was somewhere in your comfort zone, that where people, you know, basically were comfortable with you, whether they were in the community, whether there's any holdovers in the administration, even though it's not the same arena that you played in, but still having that same comfort zone of being in familiar turf, if you will? How critical was that for you?
It was definitely critical, because if I was going to coach college, I wanted to coach my alma mater. I mean, I felt like if I would have applied for a lot of other jobs, I would have gone in, gave an interview, and would have been successful wherever I had gone, you know, to get the job, even without the college experience. I just felt like the time was right. I wanted to do it for my own alma mater, my hometown, and I wanted to stay here. And I think a lot of guys have tried to compare me to Chris Mullin, Patrick Ewing, and, you know, Clyde Drexler really had a short stint at the University of Houston. The only difference is I coached AAU. I coached high school, and I was so familiar with 8 years of being in that arena with the grassroots that these are the same kids that are playing college. So I think there's a slight difference in that case when it comes to us.
So obviously, you know, I'm a little older than you, but I mean, obviously, I've seen your whole career. The players that you're recruiting, I'd be shocked if anyone actually has ever seen you play. You know, maybe they've watched it, but
You know, how has that been for you in terms of relaying your experiences in the players that you're recruiting to understand sort of the level that you played at and the work ethic that you put in to get to where you were?
Yeah, I think the best thing that I have going for me is that the parents of the players, the guardians, and the coaches that coach these kids, they go on YouTube and show them my history and how I did the game. The kids know me from my sneakers because Nike did a great job with the Foamposite, and a lot of the kids around the country, they love my sneakers. So that's a way that I've stayed relevant. But for the kids that didn't see me play, because all these kids that I'm recruiting, none of them did, their families, their friends, their coaches, guardians, or whoever, whomever, they go to YouTube and show them my, you know, my game and how I played and my accolades, and that weighs a lot with the kids around the country.
Now, obviously, you know, you crossed over in the mainstream with Lil Penny. You know, when you look back at your experiences, where does that one rank in terms of, you know, one that you enjoyed or didn't enjoy, just that sort of helped define you, even though it was something sort of off the court?
Well, I mean, it was number one in my career because it helped thrust me to another level. My basketball play took me to be first team All-NBA and All-Star and Dream Teamer. But Lil Penny took me to a magnitude to where even if you weren't a basketball fan, you enjoyed the commercials. The Lil Penny commercial. So he took me to another level, or a level or two higher than where I was as a basketball player. Lil Penny was very instrumental in my career being so big around the world, not just in the country.
Now, what kind of Lil Penny souvenirs do you still have?
Well, I still have the actual doll, the almost like the life-size doll that they used in the commercial. And I got some other small miniature dolls that they sold that finally went on the market. So, you know, I could never forget Lil Penny.
Now, your son, Jaden, what does he think of it?
Oh, he loves it. You know, they call him Lil Penny, but he loves it, though. I mean, it was comedy. You know, anytime you're dealing with an athlete and doing commercials and there's comedy involved, I think you could never lose with that.
All right, so let's look at recruiting here. You know, in terms of the roster that ended last season, if my numbers are correct, you know, there could have been 12 returning players based on, you know, who was a senior and who wasn't. Of that number, when you took the job, you know, how many were left and how many did you think, you know, you potentially could have as a holdover?
Well, when we originally came back, there were eight players that were new. So coming back, it would have been 12, like you said, six of the guys, three asked for release. One became ill, so we probably have to do a medical on him. And the rest were a few were walk-ons. So we really have four, five, six returning players coming back now, which opened up scholarships for us to go out and recruit guys that we wanted to recruit.
Now, I'm hoping you can speak to these. I think you have all the NLIs, but you got your son, Jaden, Tyler Harris, Antoine Jones, Alex Lomax, and Isaiah Maurice, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Which is a pretty good haul in a short amount of time. And as you were saying, I mean, you were connected. It wasn't like you came, you know, completely out of the blue into this world. As soon as you got the job, you know, take me through sort of those initial moments of, okay, deal with the presser and all that kind of stuff. What were some of the first things that you had to do to make sure that you could make an impact on the recruiting trail and actually, you know, sign potential players that are going to help you right away?
Yeah, well, after the press conference, I had a meeting with the existing team. You know, I spoke to them about being a family, trusting one another, moving forward. And then shortly after that, some of the guys who probably had been talking to coaches between the span of Coach Smith leaving and me coming, and these guys started coming to me, and I wanted to have individual meetings. They said that it was nothing, no offense to me, but they wanted to leave. So first I had to see how many scholarships I could actually get, because initially we only had three. And then four more opened up really quickly, and that allowed me to go out and understand what I can do and what we needed to go with the mix that was staying. And then I really had to also kind of figure out, okay, who else is going to leave or wants to leave? And once we got to that number of everybody, okay, everybody else wants to stay, they want to be a part of this, then I went out and started thinking about, okay, we need a big. We need a skilled big. We got rid of like four guards. So we need guards. And, you know, going into the recruiting process of it, of course, we went after some larger ranked players around the country, and we went after a few players, and we couldn't get those guys. But then a couple players fell into our lap. Their families they opened their recruitment and their families or their handler or someone reached out to us and said, hey, we're interested. We brought them in. They enjoyed what we showed them and what we talked about, and they signed. And it was a blessing to be able to get Antoine Jones, who had committed to, you know, Texas A&M, and it was a blessing to get Isaiah Maurice and Tyler Harris and Alex Lomax, who was my point guard in high school. And it was just it all fell into place the way that we needed it to fall into place.
So as it stands now, how will Memphis look, compete, and you think perform next season?
Well, I'm really excited about my team. I mean, we got a veteran team coming back. We have a really tough league. I have so much respect for all the coaches that are in our league. Man, coaching-wise, we have like some of the best coaches in the country, hands down. So the team coming back was already good with senior-laden guys that were really hungry, that didn't get a chance to do what they really felt that they wanted to do last year by going to the NCAA tournament. So you add some really great freshmen and a great junior in Isaiah Maurice to go along with the talent. I think we have as good a chance as anyone, without disrespecting the Cincinnati's and the Wichita States and the Houston's, the better teams from last year, with winning our conference with what we have mixed together. And we're going to play fast. We're going to play offensively. We're going to play fast. And defensively, we're going to get out the people. We're not going to hold the ball. We want to be the highest scoring team in the country and the best defensive team in the country at the same time. So that's our focus, and we really feel like we can do that.
You know, Penny, apathy can certainly crush a program, and there had been apathy there. No offense to Tubby or even Josh at the end of his term, but you know, it had started to sort of head in the wrong direction. Your hire certainly infused tremendous enthusiasm in the program in a city that's embraced basketball, both obviously collegiately and on the professional side with the Grizzlies. What do you anticipate it being like at the FedEx Forum when you guys have home games, especially that first one for you when you walk out onto that court?
It's going to be electric. You know, it's just the city is on fire right now. Everyone is excited. To Josh's defense, I mean, you can't – it's so hard to come behind what John Calipari did. You know, when John left to go to Kentucky, he kind of left Josh in a very unorthodox situation, and Josh did the best that he could. And then Coach Smith came in behind that, and he had some kids to transfer, and he got put in a really bad situation. So it was kind of unfortunate for both of those guys how it all went down. But my hire has definitely – lit a fire under the community, and they're ready to support us. And I know in our first game that it's going to be jam-packed and it's going to be electric. We've gotten the fans back excited about Memphis basketball.
And before I let you go, Penny, you know, I mentioned Jaden. You're making me feel old that you're coaching your son now. What's that going to be like for you to the sort of double barrel of, you know, coming back to your alma mater? It's your first head coaching job at the collegiate level. It's at Memphis. Oh, and by the way, you get to coach your son.
Yeah, that's, you can't even script that any better, Andy. It's a dream for me to be at the University of Memphis, but also, like you said, to be coaching my own son at my alma mater. His mother actually went to the school as well and graduated from Memphis, so he's excited. We're excited as a family that he's going to be in a University of Memphis uniform with me at the helm. So now we just got to get him to performing at a high level to help us win games.
Well, Penny, congratulations on this gig. And I really look forward to obviously talking to you more in the future. And I know you're going to get Memphis energized. And it's certainly going to be a program to keep an eye on throughout the course of next season and beyond.
Yeah, thanks a lot. We're excited and we're ready to go.
All right, thanks, Penny.
All right, thank you, Andy.
And coming up here on March Madness 365, new High Point head coach, Tubby Smith. Now joining me here on March Madness 365, the new head coach at High Point, Tubby Smith. It kind of sounds a little bit different. Tubby, we've talked many times at all your different stops. You know, some have been, almost all of them obviously have been by your choice. This latest one was not initially. When the situation sort of turned at Memphis, what made High Point the right stop for you at this point in your career and life?
Well, you know, it wasn't really, High Point was not on my radar, to be honest with you. And I'm not saying that, you know, in a derogatory way.
No, it makes sense.
I was planning on really just, you know, once you get fired, you're kind of going through a period of it. It's happened to me before, so I'm going through a period. Well, I'm just going to take it easy, take some time off. There are going to be other opportunities. And just which I haven't had a break in about 45 years, to be honest with you. So, but I love what I do. I love coaching. I love teaching. And the president here at High Point University and I went to college together. So this job had opened up about a week or two before I was let go at Memphis. And we really hadn't had a chance. And Scott had done a great job here. So we've been supportive of the university, High Point University, and my alma mater for years. So it was an opportunity for us to, when he mentioned it, Nito Cobain, you know, but it's turned out to be something special, you know, so we're really excited about being here. So a lot of things different from previous stops, but we'll find a way. We've got a new arena coming on board. So a lot of great things happen.
So it's interesting you say you haven't had a break in 45 years. I've had a lot of coaching friends who, you know, have gotten fired or whatever, you know, something's happened with the contract, whatever. And they take that year off to sort of get recharged, go around, visit friends, see what they, you know, right, maybe want to do the next time around. You've never had that, you know, from Tulsa to Georgia to Kentucky to Minnesota to Texas Tech to Memphis to High Point. I mean, you've never had a break. You know, at any of these junctures, did you ever stop and think, you know what, maybe I should just pause at least for one season, take a breath and see what, you know, what I want to do next and how I want to tackle it?
Oh, absolutely. That was on my mind. Just mentioned, I mean, I'm sitting here now going, you know, do you have that energy? Do you have that drive? But this is probably the only place, a High Point in this situation at that time when all the things that Nito Cobain and the athletic director, Dan Houser, approached me with. I mean, that was influential. You know, it's going back home to my, you know, where I went to college, where I met my wife. And so I think it was a little pretty emotional. You know, I think those are very, you got to be real careful about that. And because there are things that you'll find, you know, at a High Point University that are a lot different from a Memphis or a Texas Tech or, you know, Georgia or Texas Tech, but still, it's just it's coaching, and I love coaching. But I'm sensing that the things that we need to get done is I've been reinvigorated because I have friends here. I have, you know, and this university is growing left and right, so I'm really excited about that.
What did Donna say, your wife? I mean, she's been with you throughout all this about, you know, what you should do.
Well, she's wanting me to stay and keep working. I don't know why, but no, she wanted me to continue because what happens is you look at your extended family, which is your staff and personnel. You feel bad because all of those folks are without. Now they no longer have jobs. So you get concerned. And also my son Gigi was let go at Loyola this year. So it was an opportunity for me to bring them on board, bring some of my staff if they wanted to come on board. So those things made it easier for me to stay in the business and come to High Point.
Now you've been at, you know, the highest level with all the perks and amenities. So what's it like to, you know, I mean, no offense. There is no offense. I mean, High Point knows where it is on the pecking order. What's it been like to sort of take that step back at the lower Division I level where you're not going to have, you know, as many, for lack of a better term, as many amenities as you would, whether it was at Kentucky, Minnesota, Texas Tech, or even Memphis?
Well, those amenities, to be honest with you, I kind of blown out of proportion at the major college level. You really don't have, you know, some guys, I mean, there are very few people where coaches can just jump on a plane and go recruiting. You know, there are very few places like that. Maybe the Kentuckys, maybe the North Carolinas, the Dukes. But outside of that, that's not happening at many places. There may be a few others. I know it didn't happen at Texas Tech. It didn't happen at Memphis. I mean, you might be able to find a plane now and then, but it's something you had to work. You had to go out and get done. And so we can do that here. You know, I can grow this program, and we can grow this program together. And there's been commitments made by our administration, which I appreciate. But it is a league that probably going to be on buses. I guess that's the thing. The biggest adjustment that I will probably have to make. But I'm a guy that comes from, you know, I've always felt like I really didn't need a lot. I've come from high school coaches where I actually drove the bus. That's been years ago. I've been in other programs like Tulsa where you didn't have, you know, all the things they do now. But when we first got there, there were drive to St. Louis or drive to Illinois State or, you know, so it's, I don't know, if you love the game. And one of the things in talking to someone like Cliff Ellis and other guys that have been in this business, or, you know, Eldon Miller, you know, people that have moved from those levels, maybe at Ohio State.
You know, Al Skinner's doing that now at Kennesaw.
Yes, at Kennesaw State. So it's, you know, it's, if you love the game, it's not because you need it or you're financially broke. It's just that you feel you love the game and you love coaching. So it's, you'll adapt. You'll adjust and you'll adapt, which I'm doing now. I mean, but I'm looking out the window now. It's a beautiful campus. The sun's shining. The people here appreciate me, and so I'm looking forward to it.
You know, look, this is a credit to you that part of the reason that you have not had to have this break is because you've been able to get these other jobs one after the other. What do you think it is? And maybe I don't want to say toot your own horn here, but I mean, clearly you've done the things the right way that other athletic directors, when they've had an opening, you know, have said, you know what? He's the guy. What do you think it is that you've done well that you haven't had to sort of search for these jobs, that they've come to you despite, you know, what happened at Minnesota and at Memphis?
Well, because they've saw the, you know, people that are in the business appreciate that we change the culture to the proper culture. You know, we took over Memphis. We had an APR issue. The last semester, a fall semester of last year, we had the highest GPA in the history of Memphis basketball players, men's basketball. You understand me? So we were establishing. We left 11 guys there. Every starter's back except one. Every player improved their stats the year before. So, I mean, when you look at the, you know, when you look, dig deep and you see the changes that had to be made and the influence and the impact you have in a program, you know, that's what you put down deep roots. You change it for the good. So the next person, or even if you're, because I tell players when I recruit myself, you know, I could get hit by a car, I could drop dead tomorrow, I could get fired. Come here because you love, you know, the institution, you love the players you're around. And that's the way we recruit. Obviously we love to be able to win and championships and compete, but we know that it's, and that's a challenge. And you go back to Texas Tech. I mean, you went down there and they had seven, hadn't had a winning team in 7 years, hadn't been in NCAA in 9 years. But you know, if they give you time, and which they do, if they give us time, which to turn programs around, you know, Minnesota was that was a whole different world. That you know, the issue there with the administrator, with the AD was tough. But that's, and Memphis, they just, you know, their thing is they've got to have. You know, I know you got to put fans in the stands and you've got to sell tickets. But we felt like we were heading in the right direction, and I think we left it in pretty good shape.
You know, to that point, in covering Chris Beard in Texas Tech this past season, he was incredibly complimentary of you, of what you left him. Obviously, we saw that with the kind of talent they had there, and led by Keenan Evans and the veteran guys that you put there. And then, in talking even to Penny Hardaway about Memphis, there's a core group there that, you know, he's hoping to win right away because of the guys that you left, in addition to the newcomers that he's bringing in. So, you know, how much do you take with that, you know what, you have left these places, you know, not bare, and that, you know, that they're on solid footing where the next guy can come in and win?
Again, you when you say do it the right way, you don't take shortcuts, you build for the long term. And then I think not only do these teams, not only do the coaches that inherit or take over these programs win, but the program prospers. You know, they develop. They see what's going on, but it just takes time to teach and to educate the fans, especially that's happening. And I appreciate Chris Beard. Well, but again, those are veteran players. You know what I mean? You know, at those schools, you're probably not going to get the one and dones that are that many times. But if you can get good players and develop them, and they believe in what you're doing, which you know, Texas Tech did, and certainly we did it at Georgia. We did it everywhere we've been, whether it was Kentucky. We left good teams and good players there because, you know, we tried to get the right guys that were going to have one foot out the door. And our kids don't transfer a lot. I mean, we had that problem in Memphis, but we've always been able to help to give kids confidence and belief, the value system that they want to be a part of. And that's, I think that's core to what we're about and how we try to establish, you know, longevity. And, you know, that's what I was trying to allude to before about the transfer. You know, I was saying, you know, you got to teach players how to fight through these things and not just give up when things get rough, you know. And that's why we, you know, all of a sudden, a guy didn't get the playing time, or somebody doesn't like what coach said, or anything. You know, somebody is on the outside is pulling at him. That is just a lot tougher than it's been in the past because of, I guess, the notoriety and the social, that's out there, the social network that people that can be exposed to, you know, about it, whether good and bad, you know what I mean? Or, you know, it's on the network. Oh, why didn't you play tonight? Or I was upset because he didn't play. So now you got to fight through that and get better. So.
And one last thing, Tubby. I mean, I don't know now that you're out of it, but how much will you take some sort of solace in that you can just coach and, you know, develop these young guys and put a winning product on the floor and not have to worry about, you know, okay, we only had 5,000 in the stands. We only had 10,000. We didn't sell out. That those sort of, you know, external pressures that come with those high profile jobs of, you know, what's going on in terms of how many people are there, how many tickets you're being sold, that somehow gets filtered to you as the basketball coach. And, you know, ultimately sometimes you can pay the price for that. You don't have to worry about that at a place like High Point. How much, you know, will that be a little bit different for you?
Probably not, you know, cause I never really felt that pressure. I mean, no one really said, hey coach, you got to, yeah, I didn't get the negativism of the whole problem there, you know, at Memphis. I know there's a certain element, you know, they play in a big arena there, you know, that seats 18,000. It's just a lot of people that have to, you know, it's just different. The times have changed, you know, with the new, you know, when you look at the way the NCAA is structured now, it's tough for schools to, so, you know, and I think you got to live within your means. You got to stay with, you got to have the vision. But, no, I think it'll be fun. You know, I don't know that, again, I've never looked at it as, okay, but if you put a good product out there, people are going to come, they're going to watch, they're going to want to cheer for you. You know, obviously, we had a lot of things surrounding, now, the Memphis program, you know, because let's face it, you know, they'd had a pretty good program before I got there. And certainly we didn't. It wasn't like we were inheriting something bad. Same here. You know, it's not like you're taking over programs that's just been downtrodden. So it's I feel good about what we did there at Memphis, and I'm feeling good about what we're going to do here. You know, so it's a process, and we know it's not going to be easy, but I'm ready for the long haul, and that's what you do. You plan, you have a plan, you stick to it. And you go as hard as you can, and that's all you can do. That's all you can ask about players. And that's why I'm listening to John Wood. Just give your best effort, and that's all people want.
Well, Tubby, it's great that you're, you know, staying visible, staying in the game, and I know the people at High Point will be better served to having you on campus and then coaching their players. So I appreciate you joining us.
Hey, thank you.
And that'll wrap up this edition of March Madness 365. As always, we cover the sport year-round, and you can go to NCAA.com and all our social media platforms for coverage on college basketball. In fact, last week, had a chance to talk to Ben Hallam at Mississippi State, where they're getting back four of their key players who decided not to stay in the NBA draft. And we're going to see a lot more of that over the next couple of weeks, because remember, the deadline to withdraw from the NBA draft is May 30th. So a lot of these rosters, they're a little bit in flux right now. They will take shape in the beginning of June as players decide whether or not to stay in the NBA draft or go back to school. Once again, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Andy Katz, and stay with us throughout the course of the year here on March Madness 365.